Begin the current daven sech the Shabbos daf tzadivov. We begin on the top line of the Gemara, where the Gemara continues discussing the previous daf, and it was discussing the different levels of invalidating the status of a kli. A vessel is a complete vessel that can be used for different things in halacha, and one of them is regarding, for example, the halacha of tumah. That is, it's makabel tumah, but if it's not a kli, then it's not makabel tumah. So, what would be the size of the break to undo it from the status of a kli? So the Gemara continues discussing this halacha. Amr Ravasi. Ravasi says, "Shani, we learned the Tanoim learned in the Braisa." Kli cheres shira, what is the shear, the measurement of a kli cheres, of an earthenware vessel? And that is the first shear that's said about it, that will say that it'll be mevatalit somewhat from its status of a kli. So the first level, the smallest hole, so to speak, is bekoinis mashke, is the amount of liquid that will come into it. That will be mevatalit, that's from the aloha of a toira of mechatos. That is the waters with the ashes of the paraduma, the red heifer that's put together and is thrown on someone that's tummy. That shear is, if it has a hole that liquid could come in, that will what invalidate it from a kli. But le'omru mitzi mashka, however, they didn't say that even the hole that, which is even the smaller hole, that if it will let liquid out, that will that should invalidate the kli. That was only said in gistrabalva. That was only said regarding a shard. That is, the smallest hole of mitzi mashka, letting liquid go out, it's not considered a hole bechlal in the halachas of the status of a kli. It was only said regarding a shard that there, even if it's going to have such a small hole that even liquid will go out, but liquid can't even come in yet, they will say that we're going to throw it out. On that, the Gemara asks, "My timer, what's the reason? You're telling me regarding a kli, even for the highest gold standard, which is for the mechatas, where it says in the pasuk it has to have a kli, that it has to have the size of a hole that liquid can go out, that liquid can come in, but for going out, which is a smaller hole, it will not be considered invalidating. However, regarding a shard, you say that it is. What's the difference?" On that, the Gemara says, "I'm mazurt b'ed Rav Nachman lefi she'in oimrim havi gistra legistra." No one says bring a shard for the shard. In other words, don't bring another shard for this shard that has a hole. That is, if it has a hole that's dripping out, and you say, okay, bring another shard. However, a full vessel, people have to say, oh, it's a shud, like they say, what, we're going to throw away a good cup, a good bowl, a good container just because it has a small little hole. Bring a shard to go collect the drops that are coming out. It still works. It still does its main job. However, a shard that has a hole, and now you have to bring a shard for a shard, that people can say, okay, just throw it in the garbage. It's not worth it to hold on to it. That's the difference. That's why by a shard, even if it has the smallest hole of a mitzi mashka, then that will invalidate it because no one's holding on to it. But a regular full-fledged kli, even if it has the hole of a mitzi mashka, it's still, people will say, bring a shard and collect the drops. It's only going to be invalidated when it can even bring in liquid. Then it's going to undo it, at least for the higher standard, for the mechatas, that it requires a full-fledged kli. Also, regarding these halachas, ama'ula, pligiba trea amirab amirab. They argued about this regarding hechshes roim. That is, regarding, we said, seeds that they can become prepared for the halachas of tumah, that they're vulnerable. It's only when they're not considered attached to the ground. So, for example, if let's say there's a hole in the vessel, an atzitz nakiv, there's a flower pot that has a hole that's opposite the ground. So therefore, depending on the size of the hole, we'll say that it's considered connected to the ground. However, if it's a smaller size, if it's considered like it's blocked off from the ground, then it's not connected to the ground. Therefore, it's separate, it's tolush, and therefore then it could be susceptible to tumah. It's only things which are connected to the ground that are not. So therefore, there was a machlekes to Amaram in Eretz Yisrael regarding how big does the hole have to be to say that it will be considered connected to the ground. Rabbi Yisib Rabovin, Rabbi Yisib Razavdin. These two Amaram argued. Chad Amar Kamitzi Riman. One said that the hole has to be at least the size of a pomegranate. Then we'll say that it's such a large hole. Now we see it connected the earth and this flower pot to the ground, and therefore it's not susceptible to tumah. Chad Amar Kashar Shkot. One says that it's the size of a small little root. That's how small it has to be. V'semanecha, and the mnemonic to remember this, that you shouldn't confuse and think that one of them said the size of an olive, which would be an intermediate between the size of a small root and the size of a pomegranate, which is very large, is the following famous Talmudic dictum of Echad Amarbe v'Echad Amamet. Whether one does a lot or whether one does a little, this is a braisa masechtas menachas, which is that it doesn't make a difference. As long as you have intent for Hashem, it doesn't make a difference in the quantity, it's the quality that makes a difference. So this is a siman, a mnemonic to remember, that one of the Amaram gave a very large measurement, which is the largest of all these three, of the small root and the olive and on the pomegranate. He gave the pomegranate. Another one gave Echad Amamet. He gave the smallest of the three, which is the size of the small root. However, no one said the share of the baini of the middle level, which was that of the olive. And regards, although we said in the previous summit that there are five levels, there's Moitzi Mashka, Koinis Mashka, and there's the three that we just mentioned with the Shayrish Katan and the Zayis and the Rimon. The first two, Rashi says that Bichlal doesn't come into the consideration because letting in liquid or letting out liquid is very small, and that's for sure not going to be considered connected to the ground because it has a small little hole. That will still be considered that it's detached, and therefore it would be susceptible to Tumah. So however, the machlokes that we had was either Echad HaMarbe, the largest share of a Rimon, or Echad HaMarbe, the smallest share of the Shayrish Katan, enough for a small root to be opposite the ground, but the middle size of an olive, of that, no one said that opinion. Amrav Chinda Bar Kahana Meshmeder Belaza, Kli Cheres Shiuri Kemoitzi Zaisim, the measurement of an earthenware vessel to say that it'll be tahar from the halachas of Tumah is if it lets out, in other words, if you would fill it up with olives, they would all fall through the holes, it has the hole the size of an olive, that will undo it from the status of Kli, and therefore will be tahar from the Tumah. Umar Kashisha Bereid the Rabbi Messiah Ba Meshmeder Belaza, he would end off in regarding these halachas, Varehen Kekli Glolim Ukli Avonim Kli Adamim. And this that we say that it has the shear of an olive is that it has the same halachas like dungware and stoneware and earthenware, things which are made out of the earth. That is, once it has the hole the size of an olive, even if you designate it for pomegranates, generally we say the status of a kli of a balabayas, as it says in Masechtas Kelim, that although it generally goes according to the size of an olive, but if you want to use it for pomegranates, which are larger, they're not going to fall through the holes, then it will be mekabel tumah. However, the Gemara says that that's only regarding kli eitz. That's wooden utensils. There you could designate it for Rimon. However, regarding these types that we just mentioned, they are always going to be the max out at the size of an olive, and if it has the hole the size of an olive, it'll be tar. Same thing applies to Klicheres, as the Gemara says, She'im HaKabotumah, Lemin Divri Tair, V'Lemin Divri Seifrim. Now, once it gets the size, the hole's the size of an olive, of the Kli, it's tar, both min HaTair and even min Rabban. However, the Gemara ends off le'init samit pasul regarding this cover that's fastened on top of it. That, as we mentioned on the previous daf, actually pachis ruba. That's until the majority of it is broken, because the halachas of tumah regarding tumas of oil in the tent, when you cover it with a fastened kli, which it says it's a pasuk in the Torah, that's only if it says al pesach has come through the opening, not through the holes, and therefore only until the majority is broken do we say that it's an opening and not just a hole, and that's why for there has to be the majority. Hadnu lachem etzni, we shall return to you perek etzni, the 10th perek of Masechta Shabbos. Now we begin the 11th perek of Masechta Shabbos. Continue again the theme of the previous perek. I'm talking about the malach of itzah of transporting something from one domain to another domain on Shabbos, specifically regarding the mode of transportation of zrika, of throwing, and of a shot of passing one thing to another thing. Another thing to keep in mind when we discuss all these malachas, as in particular regarding malach of itzah, but it applies to all malachas of Shabbos, it's exactly how it was done in the Mishkan, that is where we learn that all the lamentes malachas. And therefore, we're going to see that the nuances of exactly how it was done in the Mishkan will apply to know the halachas of Eitzah, how it applies to the halachas of Shabbos. So we begin the current Mishnah. Hazarik mirshus hayachal rishus rabbi. Someone that throws something from the private domain to the public domain on Shabbos, or mirshus harab mirshus yachal, or the reverse, from a public domain to a private domain on Shabbos, his chayv is liable. That's considered Eitzah, not only if you carry it, but even if you throw it. Mirshus hayachal rishus hayachal rishus rabbi be'emtzah. But what is if you throw it from one private domain, but it ends up it's also in the private domain, however, it passes through the airspace of Rishus HaRabim of a public domain. And that we have a machlokes in our Mishnah. B'kiva Mechad, B'kiva says you're liable. And the Gemara is going to explain what's the reason, because L'chari didn't end up in Rishus HaRabim, it only ended up in Rishus HaYachad, and that's not an Issa Deraisa of transporting, it has to go from one domain to a different domain. V'cham Pait Mecham hold that you're exempt, again, because it did not land in Rishus HaRabim, it landed in Rishus HaYachad. So the Rabbanan explained Ketzad. What is the case that we're talking about that we say that your Pater, if it goes from Rishus HaYachad, again to another Rishus HaYachad, passing through Rishus HaRab? So they explain. Shtei guzus terois, zu keneged zu b'Rishus HaRab. We're talking about two balconies that are facing each other in Rishus HaRab. That is, that there are the cases that will have one on one side of the street, another one on another side of the street, and they're each 10 tfachim high, and they're 4 tfachim squared. And that's the area of a domain of Rishus HaYachad. And you throw from one to the other, it passes through Rishus HaRabim. Or Hamaish, and that type of, those two type of cases, we have Rishus HaYachad on either side of the Rishus HaRabim. So then the two halachas apply, Hamaishit v'Hazarik, Mezulazu, something that he hands something over, or he throws it over, again, from Rishus HaYachad to Rishus HaYachad over the street, then Pater, then he's going to be exempt. And that is because we don't find Zrika and Aishata, throwing and passing, by the Malachas of the Mishkan, as we mentioned before, that it's exactly how it was said and done in the Mishkan, that would apply to the Malachas of Shabbos, down to the nuances that was done. That is, we don't find that they went from one Rishus HaYachad to another Rishus HaYachad with the width of Rishus HaRabim between them, Because the avodah of the Levim, the way they did their service, the way everything that was part of their putting together and undoing the Mishkan, they would pass the kerushim, the beams, from one wagon to another wagon, only one in front of the other, not from one to the side. And the way that was set up was that there were four wagons for the B'nai Merari, who were the ones that carried the kerushim, the beams of the Mishkan. And they would go, there was two side by side, and then two behind them side by side also, as the Gemara says. And when they would undo the Mishkan to put them and carry them on the wagons, so they would put on the wagons exactly, and they would travel exactly, they would put it and do it exactly how they traveled. Again, two by two, a square of four. And therefore, if that's the way they traveled, we know that the way they would carry it would be exactly how they would be closer to the Mishkan. So it would pass it from when they would take it on the front ones and then put in the back ones. And when they would settle and try to put the Mishkan back together again, they would go from the back one to the front one all the way to the Mishkan. So therefore, they never had the width of Rishos HaRabim between them. They had the length of Rishos HaRabim between them that they would pass it. They wouldn't pass it from wagon to the other because the two in front were there anyways. They had no reason to pass it to each other. They were putting it to the Mishkan because they wanted to come as close as possible to the Mishkan. And therefore, they say, we don't find anywhere that one would go from Rishos HaYachad to Rishos HaYachad with the width of Rishos HaRabim Be'emtza, and therefore, you're going to be potter. However, and that's what the Mishnah continues, they say, however, hayushtein b'dyuta achas, if both of them were on one level, that is, they're both on the length of Rishos HaRabim, and there's a hefsek of Rishos HaRabim between them, then the halacha will be hamoyshit chayv, the one that passes from one house. Let's say it's on the same side of the street. It's not the width of Rosh Hashanah, rather the length of Rosh Hashanah, the length of the street. And you have two houses side by side, and the Rosh Hashanah between them. They're passing one to the side. That's according to that's the length of Rosh Hashanah. Then you are going to be chayv, because that is exactly as we just demonstrated. That was there by the Mishkan. That above from the wagons were 10 high and they were 4 wide. So therefore, each wagon was considered their own Rosh Hashanah. And then when they would be passing it from the back wagon to the front wagon when they're unloading, or when they were loading, they would be taken from the front wagon to the back wagon. That was the length of Rosh Hashanah, with passing from one Rosh Hashanah to another Rosh Hashanah with the length of Rosh Hashanah between them. And therefore, that is the case you're going to be chayv, not the width. Exactly as we said, it's down to the minutia of how it was done in the Mishkan. However, Vazorik Pater, although we're saying that one that will pass from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah with Rosh Hashanah, the length of Rosh Hashanah in the middle, even according to Rabbanan, however, one that throws will be Pater. And that is because that we don't find in the Mishkan, because it, not with the length and not with the width, as the Mishnah continues to explain, because this is exactly how the Levim did it. This is how we find they did their avodah in the Mishkan. That shteagol is zuachar zu b'shusram. We had the two wagons, one after another, in the public domain. Meshitna krashim azulazu. They would pass the beams one from the other. So therefore, Rabban say, I agree in that case, not by the width, but the length of b'shusram, that then you're going to be chayiv, exactly as we said. However, abaloi zarkin, but they wouldn't throw it because the beams are too heavy, so no one was throwing them. So if we don't find the equivalent parallel in the Mishkan that they would throw it, so therefore that you're going to be potter on. But since we know that they passed it, so therefore, as we said, that's exactly what it was. In Rosh Hashanah, they would load it and unload it from on the length of Rosh Hashanah, not with the width, because they have no reason to pass to each other. So width you potter, but length you chayiv according to Rabban, according to Bikiv, you chayiv even on the width. And this Gemara is going to explain why would you be chayiv if we don't find that in the Avodah of the Mishkan, what the Levim did. So now we continue on to Amud Beis with the Gemara. Begins the Gemara explaining the Mishnah. So our Mishnah is talking about a new concept in Hoitzah regarding transporting from one domain to another, and specifically regarding Zrika, throwing it, not actually walking it. So the Gemara goes back and says, Mechti, Zrika told the Hoitzah. We take it for granted, we're assuming that throwing something from one domain to another domain is a Toilad, it's a derivative from the Malacha Deraisa Hoitzah of a transporter, because obviously it's a Toilad because it's not written with one of the Aves Malachas. And it's definitely going to be a Toilad of Hoitzah because it wouldn't make sense to make it a Toldah of any other Av Malacha because it's very similar in its concept to Hoitzah, which is written one of the Avos Malachas. So that we're assuming. However, the question is, back to the basics. Hoitzah gufa hechik sivu. We discussed Hoitzah in the previous parakim, but where is the source in the Pasuk that Hoitzah, that transporting something from one domain to another domain, is a Malacha deresed, that this was done in the Mishkan, and therefore we can't do that on Shabbos. Amr b'yechnod, Amr Kred, says a Pasuk in Shemais. Vayitzav Moshe, Moshe commanded, Vayivir kol b'machane, and they sounded a voice in the camp. And the pasuk there ends, lamer to say, Ish ve'isha al yasu oid malocha, that man and woman should not do any more work, l'srum es ha-kodesh, for the donations, for the Beis HaMikdash. Vayikolo ame'evi, and the nation stopped bringing. And therefore the drush is as follows. Moshe heichan havayasab, where was Moshe situated? B'machan Leviyah. That he was a Levi, and therefore his encampment was in the Machan Leviyah. And the way it was is that the Mishkan was in the center, and around it was Machan Leviyah, around it was Machan Yisrael, and it was in concentric circles. So therefore, in the center was Moshe, and therefore he was in Machan Leviyah. Machan Leviyah Rosh Hashanah Rabbah have it. And Machan Leviyah had a halacha of Rosh Hashanah Rabbah because everybody would come to Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the Rebbe, and everyone would come there, and there was all the 600,000 people were there. So his domain had a status of Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. And what was he telling the Jewish people when they said they made a sound in the camp, stop bringing, don't bring it anymore? He was obviously telling them, don't bring from your Rosh Hashanah, which is ma'aleichem, from your tents, because each person in his own house had his gold and silver and everything he wanted to donate, is a Rosh Hashanah Yochid. Don't bring it to me, which is a Rosh Hashanah. That's the source for the Isra B'Tzah of Shabbos, because this was one of the things done for the Malachas of the Mishkan. But now the Gemara asks, how do you know that this statement by Moshe Rabbeinu was said regarding Shabbos? Don't bring it because that's a problem of Itzah. Maybe it was said during the week. And why is he telling them not to bring anymore? Because the work was complete. They had all the donations that they needed. Kiddush Sivah says in the Pasuk, the work was sufficient. And as the Pasuk ends over there, there was no need to bring any more stuff. So nothing to do with the halachas of Shabbos. It says, don't bring, we don't need. How do you know to learn up that this is a Isra B'Tzah for Shabbos? So the Gemara says, Gama Havar Havar Miyamikbrum. We learn up the similar words of sounding that we have regarding this Pasuk, regarding Moshe on Shabbos, and the word Havar of Yom Kippur. That is Ksiv Hochav of Yerukal B'machna, here where it says, don't bring from your Rosh Hashanah Yachad to my place, which is Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, that it says the word Havar of Yerukal B'machna, that they sounded the sound in the camp. Uksiv Hashem, it says over there in the Pasuk of Ayikra, the Havarta Shoifer Truah, that you should sound the broken blast, which is the halacha that said on Yom Kippur that they would sound in the Bezdin. So therefore, the Hekesh is Malahalim B'Yom Asa. Just like there, it's talking about the Havara. This sounding was done on a day which is prohibited to do Malachas, because Yom Kippur not do Malachas. Afkan B'Yom Asa. Here also, the concept of the Havara was said regarding a day that's forbidden to do Malachas, and therefore we know that it was said on Shabbos. And the point of why it was said on Shabbos again was because it's a Isra B'Tzah, not just because they finished the work, because you're not allowed to transport something from a private domain to a public domain on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, fine, if that's the source of Itzah, Ashkecha Netzah, so now we know the concept of that you're not allowed to take out something from Rosh Hashanah Yachad out into the public domain, into Rosh Hashanah Rab. Because that's what the Pasuk was saying. Don't bring it from your Rosh Hashanah Yachad to me, which is Rosh Hashanah Rab. Hachnasa Menon, but where do you know the Malacha of Hachnasa, bring something in from Rosh Hashanah Rab to Rosh Hashanah Yachad, that is a problem of Halachas of Shabbos? And that the Gemara says, Svari. It's logic to say that Hachnasa, bring something in, is a Talah, the derivative of Eitzav, taking something out, because it's the same concept, just like old Talah does. Our derivatives from the Amalach, we understand the fundamental principle that's underlying it, and we say things which are similar to that in concept, are the Talah of that Av. As the Gemara says, Mechti, Mirshus l'shusu. They're both taking from one domain to another domain. Mali afuki, mali uyuli. What's the difference about taking something out or bringing something in? It's all the same idea. It's taking from one domain to another domain. Therefore, we say that Hachnasa is Asan Shabbos, just like Haitzah is, because it's the same concept of taking it out from where it was to another location. So the Gemara says, fine. Miu Haitzah Av, Hachnasa Telada. However, but although they're both Asan to do on Shabbos from the same concept, however, taking something out is the primary Malacha. Bringing something in is a Telada, is a derivative. But now the Gemara explains. Umechni, let's see. Ahomechai of Ahomechai. You're liable both for taking something out and for taking something in, as the first Mishnah in our Masechta said, Pashad on Yadid Lefnim, when the poor person who's on the outside of Rosh Hashanah Rabbah stretches his hand inside and brings it into Rosh Hashanah Yachad, he's liable. So therefore, there's no difference in halacha regarding the Rosh Hashanah Rabbah to Rosh Hashanah Yachad, Rosh Hashanah Yachad to Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. Hachnos Netzah is the same thing. So Amai Kar Lahayav, Amai Kar Lahayav Toto, for what practical purpose are we calling one, the Haitzah, Av Malacha, and the Hachnasa, bringing something in, the Toilada, what's the difference? They're both Chayv anyway. And that the Gemara says, Nafkamina, there is a difference, and this applies to all Av Malachas, that there's a difference between being an Av or Toilada. So the Gemara says, Di Iavich de Avis Bahadi Adad, because if you do two different Av Malachas at the same time, for example, you do Harish, you plow, and you do Zriya, and you sow. Inami or also, shtei teladis b'hadei dadi, or you do two teladis of two different av malachas also at the same time. Then, mechayev tarti, you'll be liable for two malachas because they're under two different categories. There's 39 categories of malachas on Shabbos. So you do two different avis or two teladis of two different avis, you're going to be chayev two. However, the difference is v'avir avir terlada didei lemechayv elachada. But if you do the av malacha, which is in this case hoitzah, and you do the telada, bring something back in, then you're only mechayv for one, because they're both in the same category of the iser, and therefore you're not chayv for more than one malacha. And that's the difference. That's what we have to know. What's the av and what's the telada, to know that in such a case you're only liable for one. But then the Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar, according to Rabbi Lazar, Masechtas Krisis in Perek Amruloi, that he says, demechayva telada b'makam av, that you are liable for a separate issa of the derivative, even in the primary malacha. So if you do haitzah and achnas, you'll be liable for two. So then, my kar la'av, my kar la'tilda. So why, again, are we calling one the primary, one the derivative, the av and the telada, if they're both the same thing for practical purposes? You chayef for each one, even when you do both together. So the Gemara says, hach dehavi b'mishkan chashiva kar la'av. The difference is that the malacha that was significant in the Mishkan, that was called the primary malacha. The one that was not the primary one is not called, and therefore it's for the fundamental principles of learning from the Mishkan. The ones that were significant are called the Av, the ones that were not are called the Terlada. Inam, or also another version of this, is Hachtik Siva Kari Av. The one that was written in the Pasuk, that's called an Av. And the one that's not written is called a Terlada. And Taisus says that according to this version, it's really only for the Malach of Yitzah, which for that we have a Pasuk of Yitzav Moshe Avi Komanachne. For that we learn out from an explicit Pasuk, the Malach of Yitzah. But really all Malachas are not learned out from the Pasukim anyway. They're all learned out from an understanding of what the Malachas of the Mishkan were, which are not written in the Torah, and to apply them to Halachas of Shabbos. However, either way, the difference is more for the theoretical realm of learning up, how we learn up, what was considered significant in the Mishkan, that's an Av, and what was not is considered a Terlada. But now the Gemara asks, V'hoditna, this that we learned in the Mishnah, Daf Kof Amid Aleph, Hazerik Dalet Amis B'Kois L'Malam Yutvachim, someone that throws something, 4 amis, 4 cubic feet, on a wall that lands higher than 10 Tvachim. As the Gemara over there says, how can you have something landing on the wall, on the side of the wall? How does it stick over there? So the Gemara says, it's talking about a sticky fig, and it gets stuck on the wall. So then the halacha is, it's like you threw it in the ear space, and you putter, because it didn't land in Rishus HaRabim, because the halachic status of Rishus HaRabim does not apply to higher than 10 tefachim. We only view the Rishus HaRabim within the ear space of 10 tefachim. Higher than that, it's not considered Rishus HaRabim. And it also didn't land in Rishus HaYachar, in the private domain, because that's not considered a significant designated place, because it doesn't have a width of 4 tefachim squared, which is the shear of Rosh Hashanah, because it didn't land on top of the wall. If it would have landed on top of the wall, we'd see the wall as its area. But here it landed on the side of the wall. So therefore, it's not part of the wall, it's on the side. So therefore, it's just hanging there in the airspace. That is considered a makam tur, and therefore you're going to be potter. That's like you're throwing in the airspace. But if you threw it lower than 10 tefachim, and again, it's got stuck on the wall, that's kizarik ba'aretz, it's like you threw it on the ground, because that is the airspace of Rishus HaRabim, and therefore you're going to be liable. Because since it's the airspace of Rishus HaRabim, and no matter what it lands on, you're chayav, because now it's in that airspace of Rishus HaRabim, and it went from Rishus HaYachad to Rishus HaRabim. But it's not considered its own designated area, its own Rishus, not a karmelis and not a makam tur, because since it landed on the face of the wall, not on top of it, so therefore that it doesn't allow it to be its own makam mesuyim. In other words, if it would have landed on something, let's say 9 tefachim high, it's possible it could have its own, or 8 or 7, it could have its own rishus, but here it's not in its own rishus, because again, it's just like hanging in the ear, because it's stuck on the side of the wall, that does not consider as part of the wall. Only on top would be, it's in that area. So therefore, it's in the ear space of Rishus HaRabim, and you're going to be chayiv because it's lower than 10 tefachim. And then the Mishnah concludes, v'zoik ba'aretz dalet amis chayiv, and someone that throws it 4 amis in Rishus HaRabim is going to be liable. And now this is the reason why the Gemara just brought down this Mishnah, like it says, oh, that's not this that we learned in the Mishnah, is because we're trying to elucidate all the sources for the Malach of Yitzah. As we start off, where do you know Yitzah from? Then we said, okay, once you know Yitzah, how do you know Achnasa? And now we're continuing with this, and we say that if someone throws, it says in the Mishnah, on Daf Kof, someone that throws 4 amis in Rishus HaRabim, he's chayiv also. So the Gemara says, Zark dal amis b'Rishus HaRabim, menolim l'mechayiv. How do we know if someone throws something 4 amis in the public domain that is liable? Where do we see that being part and parcel of the Malacha of Yitzah? And up until now, we only knew if you're taking from one domain to another domain. How do we know 4 amis in Rishus HaRabim is going to be considered the Malacha of Yitzah of Karen? And that, Amreb Eishia, Shekin Ergi Yiriyis, Zerkin Mechtein, Zalazah. Again, we learn out everything, every principle, from how it was done in the Mishkan. And if this is how they did it in the process of making the Mishkan, that is exactly what is us, that's considered constructive act, that's us to do on Shabbos. So therefore, the weavers of the curtains that were used in the Mishkan, they would throw their needles one to another, and they were doing this in Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, we find that they would throw four amos in Rosh Hashanah, and therefore that's what's awesome to do on Shabbos. The Gemara asks, wait a second, Argan, are you talking about the weavers of the curtains? Mechtan Lomali, why do they need needles? They use a loom. So the Gemara amends it and says, no, Elish Shekain Toifi Yerias, Zerkin Mechtan Zalze. We're talking about the sowers of the curtains. They would throw their needles one to the other. And where do you have the sowers? They were what's called the Meiser Roikim. They were the embroiders. The embroiders wouldn't use a loom. They would be sewing. They would throw their needles one to another. Fine, so that's the source for you know that you see they would throw four amas. But then the Gemara asks, how do you know they threw? How do you know they were so far? Maybe they sat right next to each other. Mamash like a one amma away, 2 feet away, and they didn't have to throw, they could just pass it. So how do you know the concept of throwing four amas in Rosh Hashanah to be chayim? So the Gemara says, no, it couldn't be they were right next to each other, because then they would reach each other with their needles. That is when they would be tightening the stretch of the string, then they would hit each other with the needle and they would poke the other one, so they couldn't be so close. So Gemara says, fine, they weren't right next to each other. But Dilma, Betrech Arba Havayas, maybe they're within four amas of each other. That's 8 feet approximately, and that's you could be 7 feet within the other, and not going to poke the other one with the needle. How do you know they were more than 8 feet away that they had to throw it? So the Gemara says, you're right, that can't be the source. Elam Rav Chizda Shekein Urgi Yerias Zerkin Buch Yabiria. Because the weavers of the curtains, they would throw the shuttle in the curtain. And that is, this is like a spool that had the weft thread tied around it. And the process of how the weaving is that one goes up, one goes down, and that's how they pass the weft and the warp thread. One goes up, one goes down. That's how you make a curtain. That's how you make a cloth. So they would throw it between. Now it's already industrialized, but the way they had it is that they had these two strings, and they would pick it up, and then they would just throw it. And therefore, that would be passing it four amas away from where you are. So you see that throwing that shuttle would be passing four amas in the Shasarab. And that's why we can't do it on Shabbos. That's considered a malacha to throw something four amas in the Shasarab. But the Gemara asks, how could that be the source? But when the person would throw the shuttle, this spool, he would have to throw it, but he would be holding on to part of the string that the whole thing shouldn't get undone, that he's holding on to the weft thread, and therefore it's not totally removed from him. That's not the malach of throwing something in four amas and shusharam, because he's still holding on to it. That's not considered. You still have it. It's only when it leaves you and then it travels four amas, then you're going to be chai. So the Gemara says, no, because benisra basra, you could learn from there that it's not that he was holding on to the thread anymore. We're talking about by the last thread. When there was the last thread of the shuttle, so he would throw it, so then he wouldn't have any more left to hold on to it. Then from that act, that one last act is where we know that you see they would do a throwing act that you left go of it totally, and it would travel four amas in Shusram. That's why you can't throw a four amas in Shusram. But then the Gemara asks, how could that be the source? V'habamakam p'tur ka'azla. Even though they were doing this in Rosh Hashanah, but obviously we're all in a larger area, but where it was actually done was in the Makam Tur, in an exempt area, because it was between the walls, so to speak, of the curtain. That was when it would open up, it would travel through there. That's not Rosh Hashanah. That's a Makam Tur, because it doesn't have a width of four amas. In this area, every house is in Rosh Hashanah, but it's the house that's its own unique area. Here also, when they would throw it, the shuttle, between the parts of the curtain, that area is a Makam Tur. Again, that's not Rosh Hashanah, so how can you learn from there? So therefore the Gemara says, you're right, it's from Elishkin Urge Yuri Zerkin Buchyu Lishoy Elehim. We're not learning from how the way they would throw the shuttle, the spool, between the curtains. Rather, when they would throw one to the one that had to borrow from him. The weavers had it, and if his friend didn't have it, he had to throw it to him. From there is where we learn that, because he had an extra one, from there we see that they would throw it to his friend for amas away. And that the Gemara asked someone to, like he asked before. Maybe they were sitting one next to each other, and even if they would have to pass it to him, it wouldn't be four amas in Rosh Hashanah. How do you know the share of four amas? And that the Gemara says, no, it couldn't be that the weavers were sitting right next to each other. And therefore he had to throw it to him four amas away, because then they would reach each other with the edge of the curtain that they're trying to make, and it would be poking one to the other, therefore they had to be far away. So then the Gemara says, fine. But v'dimma shel chufi have mishal chufi. I understand they can't be right next to each other because they're making the curtain and they had to be very far away from each other. And they've had to be 4 amas. But maybe they were angled in a way that they wouldn't be touching the other. So therefore, they didn't have to be 8 amas away and still they wouldn't, 4 amas away and still they wouldn't be poking because one was this way and the other one was this way. And therefore, you could angle them in a way. How do you know? Maybe they were angled in a way they weren't 4 amas away. How could you learn up from here in Isser if it's not clear that's exactly how it was? And moreover, the Gemara asks, is it even true that the weavers would borrow a shuttle from each other? But Tani Lud, but Luda learned it's a pasuk in Shemos that says, "Ish ish mi malachta shehema oisim." Each man from the work that he was doing, this was told by the malach of the Mishkan. The drasha is mi malachta hu oisim. Only from his work would he do his avodah for the Mishkan of building it. Ve'in oisim mi malach shavei, but he would not do from the work of his friend. And that is, each one was prepared with his own professional tools to use, and they didn't have to borrow from each other. They didn't use Mimalechus Chaver. And the third question is, Vesu, and even more so, even if you want to say that this is the source for the Pshat of knowing the Isra of throwing something for Amos in Rishosra. However, Mavardal Amos Rishosra Menol and the Mechayim. How would you know that carrying something for Amos in Rishosra would be Chayim? At most, this would teach you throwing, because that's what they would throw to each other. How do you know that you're Chayim for transporting, carrying something for Amos in Rishosra? So David the Gemara says, because of all these questions, El Koldal Ramas Bishusram Gemar Gemila. All the halachas regarding 4 amas in Rishusram, whether throwing or carrying, or that it would be considered Hoitzah in Rishusram, that's a halacha of a tradition that we have a Mesoira on that. That's not considered something that we learn out from the Psukim, that we have a complete drush of exactly how it was. It's a Gemar Gemila. This is the Mesoira that we have. So now the Gemara continues with the halachas of Hoitzah, transporting something in Rishusram. Amr Yehuda Mishmol, Mekoshish, and the Mekoshish was called the gatherer. Mekoshish was one of the parshas in the Torah. He had done something on Shabbos, and Moshe Rabbeinu brought him, and they killed him. There's a machlokes on the Gemara exactly what exactly did he do that he was mechal Shabbos that caused him to be killed. So there's 3 pshat in the Gemara. First pshat is Amr Shmol, Mekoshish maver arba ames b'shusar amav. Mekoshish carried something 4 ames in the public domain on Shabbos. He didn't rip off the branch. He didn't gather it. Rather, he carried it 4 amas to Israel, and that's why he got killed. But Mesnititan, in the Braisa, we learned, Toy Lishabbat, that he detached something that was connected on Shabbos, and that's why he was killed. A third Pshad, Rav Acha ben Yaakov, he gathered, that is, it was already torn, and it was already spread out, and then he gathered it, and that for that gathering is the Malach of Ma'amra. That's why he was chayav for the Isra of Shabbos. So we have 3 pshatim, either because he carried something for Amos and Shosram, this Mekoshish that had gathered, he ripped off this produce that was attached, or he had gathered, it was already torn, but he gathered either. That's the 3-way machlek is about what was the Malach that Mekoshish had done that he was killed for in the Midbar. So the Gemara said, what's the difference? Why do we have to know the halachic perspective of why the Mekoshish was killed? So the Gemara says there is a practical nafkim in the halacha. Look at the Rav, like Rav says, the Amar Rav mitzasa megillah star be'er b'chir. That Rav says, I found a hidden scroll in the house of Reb Chiya, and that is in those days, Torah Shabbat Peh was not written down, and because they didn't write halachas, there were certain things they wrote just to remember that was hidden, that it should not be revealed because the Torah Shabbat Peh was not written. The Kosev Bey Isi ben Yehuda, it was written that Isi ben Yehuda said, of its malachas are bar mchas achas. There are 40 minus 1, which are 39 malachas of Shabbos. Ve'in achayv al achas, but you're not liable only for one. And obviously, we're only talking about when it's done inadvertently and to be chayv al karmach chatas, because if we're talking about that he did it b'mezin on purpose, obviously you can't be killed twice. So we're talking about b'shoigik. If you do all 39 malachas, you're only liable for one. And that thing where I said, achas v'sulay, is that true that if you do all the 39 malachas, you're only liable for one and not more? But it's not, but we learn in the Mishnah, it says, Avis Malachas are Bar Mchas Achas. The Mishnah says, there are 40 minus 1, there's 39 Malachas of Shabbos. Vavinabam, we asked in the Gemara on this, Minyan Nelamali, why do you have to say an amount, saying a number? I could just count, I know myself how many there are. What's the difference? Vam Rabbi Yechon, Rabbi Yechon said, the Pshad is, Shem Asin Kul Mehelam Echad, Chayva Kol Achas of Achas, is coming to teach you that although sometimes when the same Isser is done in one lapse of awareness many times, you're only liable for one, here, each one is considered its own Isser, and you're going to be liable for 39 carbon chatas, even if it's done in one lapse of awareness, if you did all 39 malachas. And therefore, how can you say you're only liable for one for all 39, if Rabbi Yochanan said explicitly that that's the pshat, why we said the number, to say that no, you're liable for each and one as separately. So therefore, we amend and says, no, eime ein chayav al achas mehem. Rather say that you're not liable for one of them. That is, there's one of them that you're not going to get chiyuv misa for, that you're not going to get killed for, and it doesn't say which one. And now, that the difference is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that one's definitely not carrying in Rishus HaRabim, because the Mekoshesh was killed for that. And according to the Brites, it's definitely not the Melacha of Toilish, of ripping something off, because that, according to them, that's why the Mekoshesh was killed, as the Gemara says. That Rabbi Yehuda, Pshita Leida HaMavachayiv, according to Rabbi Yehuda, although there's one out of the 39 that you're not going to get Misa for, he knows for sure that carrying something in Rishus HaRabim is not that one. That is the one that you will be chayv misa for, because that's the makosha. He was killed for it. Umesnitin pshita le detolish chayv. And according to the Braisa, it's pasha that tolish you will be chayv misa because that was the makosha. Rav Achma Yaakov pshita le ma'amah chayv. And according to Achma pshita, it's pasha that the ma'amah, if you gather something, that you will be chayv misa. As the Gemara says, that marasav ha misla mesafka, marasav ha misla mesafka. That according to each one, that although we're not sure which is the one, it just says one out of 39, you don't get a chiv misa. These we know for sure, according to each one, their opinion, that it's not the one that we're not sure about, that it will get a chiv misa, because that is the Mekoshesh that actually got killed for it. And that's the difference, to know what the Mekoshesh was, why he got killed, to know that this is not the one that we're Mesupik, if it's the one that you don't get killed for. So the Gemara continues on the Mekoshesh regarding his identity. Turn up on the Braisa. Mekoshesh Zet Tzlavchot. Who was the one, this gatherer, the one that was killed for Chil Shabbos in the Midbar? That was Tzlavchot. V'cheinu Oymen, because it says in the Pasuk, V'yiv v'nei Yisrael b'midbar, that the Jewish people were in the desert, V'yimtzu ish v'gayme, and they found the person, as the Pasuk there ends off, Mekoshesh Eitzim b'yam Shabbos, that was the gatherer of the wood on the day of Shabbos. Ulahal Noimer, and then there was a different pasuk that says by the Benoi Slavchad, by the daughters of Slavchad, they said, Avinu Meis Bamidbar, our father died in the desert. Each one using the same word of Bamidbar. So to come as a teacher, Malahal Slavchad, Avkat Slavchad, just like over there was a reference to Slavchad, because there was the daughters of Slavchad saying that our father died in the Midbar. So there it says there was a Mekoshesh in the Midbar, that's a reference to Slavchad also. Divrei Rebbe Akiva, that was the opinion of Rebbe Akiva. Amalei Rebbe Yehuda Meseir. Rebbe Yehuda Meseir said, Akiva, for this pshat that you're saying, that Tzlavchad was the Mekoshesh, which his identity is not given in the Torah, either way you're in trouble, that you're going to have to give judgment for this. Because if you're right in your pshat that Tzlavchad was the Mekoshesh, the Torah conceals the identity of who it was, just as the Mekoshesh doesn't say that it was Tzlavchad. And you go ahead and you reveal it, the Torah said you shouldn't. Vimlav, and if not, that's not even the pshat, you're spreading a rumor about this righteous person that never did anything wrong. How can you go ahead? Either way, if it was him, then the Torah doesn't reveal it. And if it's not him, obviously that's something bad. So continue on to Tab of Tzadik Zayim and Aleph, where the Gemara says, V'el ha-gomar gzer shava. But, so this is what was Ben Beseir's taina coin against Rabbi Kiva. But it's chayrut shreb, because Rabbi Kiva has gzer shava that teaches that it's not that the Torah concealed his identity, the Torah revealed it through one of the limudim, which is called the gzeres shav in the Torah. It's as if it was explicitly in the Torah that it says that it's slavcha, because it says, here's by midbar. So what's his question on Rebbe Akiva that you're revealing it? It says, I'm not revealing it, the Torah revealed it. This is one of the ways that the Torah is interpreted through the halacha of gzeres shav, and the gzeres shav tells us that it was slavcha. And that the Gemara says, gzeres shav legamer. Yehuda ben Meseir did not have a tradition in this Gzeir Shavah, and the person's not allowed to make his own Gzeir Shavah. He can't start comparing words. It has to be Messiah from Moshe Misinai, that this is the drush that's supposed to be said. And since he didn't have that Messiah, he says, look, Rebbe Akiva, if you're wrong, then obviously you're being Moitzilaz. And if you're right, it's also something because I don't have this Gzeir Shavah. And therefore, how could you go ahead and reveal it if the Torah concealed it? Because it's not explicit. I don't have this Gzeir Shavah.